Take it from here. That's all the way when you can take it from here. Why don't you say the lady trying to come down? The honesty
comes. Here's Dick Bentley and Jimmy Edwards will be on hand for the next 30 minutes with June Whitfield, Wallace Eaton, and the keynote, all inviting you to...
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, tonight we present the first of a new series of weird stories of the future. A series entitled Amazing Untrue Science Fiction Confessions.
We must warn listeners that in the opinion of the BBC, this program is not suitable for children, elderly people, middle-aged people, and the chap who lives out of the butcher's shop in Wimbledon High Street.
Why isn't it suitable for him?
He's a Norwegian. He won't understand a blind word. And isn't he lucky? But for the rest of you, out of the tranquilizing pills, here comes The Thing and I.
April the 15th, 1964, it happened. From the black night sky, there was a rush, a screaming blaze of light, and a great saucer-shaped object hurled itself into the peaceful earth of a Stoke Newington back garden.
A moment of silence. Then from inside came a scrabbling noise. The hatch lifted, and something snaked out. A scaly, groping tentacle with claws and great hair.
Hang on a minute, Wallace. Bentley, come out of the cupboard. It's only a story.
The Martians had arrived.
The name of the Stoke Newington man whose back garden the spaceship landed in was Horace Crump. The following morning, in the office of the Home Secretary, Sir Smedley Flattery...
And I'll just finish the letter by saying that as regards the disfigurement of the statue in Trafalgar Square, I'm afraid that's not my pigeon. Just the usual, yours affect homesick. Now, Mr. Crump, was it? What is it you've come to see me about?
Mr. Smedley, I've seen it with my own eyes. I've seen it. It's horrible, horrible. Sir, there is a thing at the bottom of my garden.
Oh, my dear fellow, lots of old houses were built that way.
I don't mean the potting shed, sir.
Oh, I do.
Sir, I know you'd say I'm off me nuts, but... Sir, a spaceship from another planet has landed on my rhubarb.
Oh, the deuce it has.
Last night, sir, my wife, Ada, saw it come down, sir. She went out to try and chuck it over into the garden next door. We don't get on very well with them. He's a Major Prendergast, sir, late Indian Army.
Yes,
very toppy nose. Many's the time I've said to him, look here, Major, you can't talk to me like I was your number one boy.
Yes, all right, Mr. Crump. Get on about the weird monster.
I told you, sir, she went out to have a deco. Then, sir, then from this spaceship, a sort of tentacle came out, pointed a kind of tube at her. There was a flash, and my Ada, sir, she was just a little pile of grey dust. I don't know what to make of it, sir.
Well, how about an egg timer? What am I doing?
Sir, what are these creatures? What are they, sir? What are they?
No, keep a cool head. Keep a cool head, Mr. Kent. Don't crimp, my dear panic. Don't crimp my panic. I'll send for our senior scientific officer. Send in Miss Caldicott, please. She's a very able scientist, isn't Miss Caldicott? For the last few months, she's been on interballistic guided missiles.
Yes, they're reckoned to be very good. My Ada used to take one every Friday. My Ada... A little pile of grey dust.
Steady, Slump. Steady.
Slump.
You sent for me, Mr. Smedley.
Oh, yes. Miss Caldicott, I have to advise you that, incredible though it may seem, the ultimate catastrophe is upon us.
You mean the auditors have arrived?
Not the Martians, Miss. Unearthly creatures. All scaly and horrible. Horrible, Miss.
Horrible! Control yourself, Slump. You're behaving like a blockhead foreigner now.
Smedley, would you give me the salient facts in terms that a scientist can assimilate?
Oh, certainly. They've turned his wife into an egg timer and ruined his rhubarb.
I say, poor devil. Rough luck, Mr. Crump. It must have been a pretty rotten blow.
I still can't believe it. How can I keep going without this shield rhubarb?
But you blew off your wife.
It's nice of you to try and cheer me up, mister. All I want is to see these creatures destroyed. Destroy them before they destroy us. I'm Secretary here.
Hello, this is Medley. Mildred Caldicott reporting. Mr. Crump and I have just come from analyzing the Martian monsters. They have eyes which are set forward from their heads at the end of 6-inch stalks.
Yeah, pretty obviously an advanced civilization. They must have had television for centuries.
They've completely annihilated Stoke Newington.
A good show.
What? And they're advancing. They're advancing rapidly on Dalston Junction, wiping out everything in their path with their devastating ray guns.
Miss Medley, you must warn the world immediately.
Mobilize the army.
Send up jet bombers.
But it's 5 minutes to five. Can't it wait till the morning?
Miss Medley, the world must know now.
This is the home service and night program of the BBC. Here is an announcement of vital urgency. Our country is being invaded by the planet of Mars. All listeners are warned to stand by their radio sets, and the BBC will issue communiques at 15-minute intervals. Meanwhile, here is a record of the Kay sisters singing the Pomp and Circumstance Cha-Cha. Just a moment. Here is another report. At this moment, a hushed House of Commons is listening anxiously to the Home Secretary, Sir Smedley Blathering.
And so, Mr. Speaker, the situation is so critical that I have brought my scientific advisor to the House to give her appreciation of the position. So let's give a big hand to a little girl who's come a long way to be with us tonight, Mildred Caldicott.
Thank you. Thank you. Gentlemen, the plain fact is this. This ray gun the Martians have reduces everything in its path to a heap of dust. Gentlemen, we have no way of destroying them. All we can do is surrender.
Surrender? You ask Britain to surrender? Never! Never! Is this the spirit of Drake? Drake, the finest center forward Arsenal ever had? There must be a way to destroy these creatures.
There is. I've got the answer. I can save the world.
Who said that?
Mr. Horace Crump.
Oh, for a moment, I thought it was Randolph Churchill. Mr. Crump, you may address the House.
Thank you. Mr. Speaker, right honorable gentlemen, left honorable gentlemen and liberals. I have been having a big think. The only dead Martians are the ones that landed in my garden. And I think I know why. Gentlemen, the Martians are allergic to rhubarb.
Yes. It is possible that certain organic chemicals could affect the Martian metabolism. And with rhubarb, you get hyperphosphated alkali and acidulated potassium.
Do you? I only get custard with mine. Gentlemen, do you realize what this means? Rhubarb is the way to save the world!
Rhubarb, 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 rhubarb.
Immediately, the scientists sprang into action. The finest brains in England set to work blueprinting the rhubarb bomb. Professor Huxley, Sir John Cockcroft, Dr. Bonofsky, and the technical assistant, Fred Streeter.
By now, the situation was desperate. New York had gone down magnificently. The south of France was overrun. The Bahamas were lost. It began to look as though Noah Card would have to take up residence at Westgate.
Then word came that the rhubarb bomb was ready for detonation. It was a very grave Home Secretary who took his place in the observation trench facing the oncoming Martians.
Well, gentlemen, this is it. Our day. Are we all set? All set. I brought my wife along in the egg timer. This is Ada, sir.
Hi there, old timer.
Well, my people are ready. In that bomb, there are no less than 400 tons of stewed rhubarb.
Without sugar. Oh, going to make my teeth go all funny.
The detonation will take place exactly 3 minutes from now.
3 minutes? Who's got a watch?
We don't need a watch. I've upended Ada.
Well, hurry up. They're advancing towards us.
Right, I'll give Ada a bit of a test. That's it. Come on, old girl. Now.
It worked. Look at them, reeling and staggering, collapsing in dozens. Hooray!
Oh, no, no, just let me go. Don't get out of the trench. There might be a trace of rhubarb active fallout.
Look, they're taking to their spaceship. They're flying away.
We've won. The world is saved. Thanks to you, Mr. Chump.
Oh.
Chump. Chump, perhaps it would be fitting if I presented you, Horace Chump, with one of these ray guns, with which so many of our people have been reduced to little heaps of gray dust.
Oh, sir, that's a very kind thought.
Take this one. But whatever you do, don't press this little knob.
Which knob?
The one my finger's resting on. This one.
Oh, Mr. Crump!
Oh, dear. Anyone got a vacuum cleaner? Marvellous how good news travels, eh? Yes, Ted, I am being sued. Ah. Me? By Carbridge's of Kensington. Yeah. For the price of one gent's natty overcoat, which they maliciously allegiate, but I have half inch off a rail. Oh.
That sounds very serious.
Sounds serious, doesn't it, eh? And naturally, I have a complete answer to this trumped-up charge.
What's that?
Guilty. With extensions, of course. But only, Ted... Only because I was the victim of an unfortunate twerp of fate.
What twerp's that?
Wrong. Oh. The whole thing started, or as you might say, began, when Ron went down with his bad cough.
Oh, yeah.
It was round our place, Elvin put him right.
Silly
go out to the coal shed and come back with the rain streaming off your head. Why didn't you put your cap on?
I was carrying the coal in it.
Oh, dear. And there's me remarking your hair's getting darker. Oh, dear, if we've got to clear that nasty cop, haven't we? Now, come on, beloved. Drape the towel over your head and get your face over the pudding basin before all the fire falls in and it gets cold.
Like this?
Yes, that's it. But why are you sitting all tense and rigid?
It's dark in here.
It's only for just a few minutes, beloved. Now go on, breathe big breaths.
It smells horrible, eh?
That's the good mist.
Not the ball from the towel.
Oh, dear. It's the one your father used to clean his motorbike. Oh, well, it's only petrol, Ron. This inhaling will do your cough the world of good, honestly. You'll see. Take a deep breath of the balsam, beloved.
Right, all right.
It may be old-fashioned, but it'll loosen all your bronchioles. Can you feel it going right down to your chest?
Yes.
That's it. Right down.
Yes. It's running down my legs now.
On the edge of the pudding basin. You've fixed it all down yourself now. Oh, Ron, it's the vapor that does the good. Now it's all gone to waste.
Never mind, Ess, I can snip it off me sock.
Ron, put your leg down. You'll rip yourself. Oh, dear. Oh, Ron, I did so want to clear up that cough before it takes a hold. Now what can we do?
I've got an idea, Ess.
Well?
You come under the towel with me.
No, Ron.
Just a kiss, Ess. We could
just... No, Ron. Not with your pullover all stopping with fire balsam. It'll kill the mood.
Hello. Having a bit of romance, eh? That's the stuff, Ess. A very good idea what you've done with that towel. When I was taught in Mrs. Glum, I used to put a cushion over her face.
Mr. Glum, the towel is over Ron's face because he's been inhaling.
Oh, dear, I'm sorry to hear that.
Come out, Ron. Mr. Glum, I'm afraid Ron's got his chest again.
You don't have to tell me, Ess. He's been wheezing like an old harmonium. Painful to listen to. Upset me so much, I just couldn't bear to be in the same room with him last night. Well, I send him out in the yard. I don't understand why he keeps getting these coughing fits, you know. But if you want my opinion, it's walking about with wet feet. Talking about that, Ron, did you do what I told you with my pair of black boots?
Yes, Dad. I got 3 and 6 for them.
3 and 6? Ron, when I said I wanted them sold, I didn't mean I... Oh, you great gormless lad.
Oh, don't you shove him, Mr. Glum. Don't touch him. He's not himself today. Are you, beloved?
No.
There we go. All right, never mind the praying for sympathy. Wilting across the sofa like the lady of the camel ears. You don't want your chest examined, you want your head examined. That's what you want examined. Selling my boots in midwinter.
Well, you sold my overcoat.
Well, of all the... You ungrateful boy, you. That was to buy your Christmas present. Well, what do you want? Do you want a stranger to sell his overcoat, then?
You really are the limit. No wonder my poor boy's been getting cough after cough. In this weather, a person's only hope is to wrap up.
Well, how about you setting us an example, then? Do as you like.
Oh, no, Mr. Glum. You're not going to get away with it. I'll tell you what you're going to do. You're going to buy that poor sick boy a warm winter overcoat immediately. Oh, look at him. Doubled over with pain.
It's not pain, Ess. I'm trying to sniff me socks again.
It doesn't matter now, Ron. It doesn't help now.
No.
Your balsam's all gone cold.
dare say you are. You may wait. You may well wait. What's the good? I mean, half a minute. I mean, it's all very well coming out with these grandioso ideas. So, where am I going to get the money to pay for a winter overcoat? The only cash we got here is Mrs. Glum's housekeeping money for the forthcoming year. How can I get an overcoat for 35 shillings?
35
shillings. Not a lot of money.
Wait a minute. I just remembered something. There were some evening papers. Well, they were on the face for a moment. Oh, there they are. Upsy daisy, Ron.
Tickety boo, eh?
I see that you're sitting on them, sweetheart.
What?
Move a little and show you. Now, come on, I'll bet. Thank you. Now, where is it? Oh, look, look, here it is, Mr. Blum.
What is
it? Now, look, see this big advertisement for car bridges of Kensington.
Oh, I
look,
see it,
look,
yes.
Here. Sales start tomorrow. Bargains, bargains, bargains. Oh, now, look, sacrifice offer. Six only, all wool Crombie overcoats for men in navy only.
Oh, Blow, and I'm a civilian.
Dear heart, it's a blue coat.
What the French call Cote d'Azur.
Oh, look, Mr. Glum, look at the price. 35 shillings. An all-white overcoat for 35 shillings.
I must say, it's a coincidence, and it is a bargain. But if it was only six, we wouldn't get near the overcoat counter. You know them bargain hunters. From the minute the door opens tomorrow, it'll be like the massacre at Rourke's Drift. Now, we've had it. There's no... I've been, what was the name of the store?
Carbridges of Kensington.
Now, that name rings a knell. Why did that... I got it. Joe Taggart.
Who?
Ron, you remember. Nice old boy we met at Auntie Flo's party. And he told us he worked at Carbridges of Kensington. Now, what did he do there?
He tried to tickle Cousin Edie.
I don't mean at Auntie Flo's. I mean, I got it. He was the night watchman. He's the store's night watchman. Now, there's a turn up for the proverbial volume. Well, now, you see, we go along to Carbridge's tonight. We get Joe to let us into the store in advance, as you might say. We go to the overcoat department, we pick one out, and leave the money on the counter. Just an extension of the self-service principle.
Well, Mr. Glum, suppose Mr. Taggart won't let us in.
Don't worry, I'll persuade him.
Can you? I mean, is it possible to persuade somebody you hardly know to do something they shouldn't?
Exactly what he was asking me in regard to Cousin Edie. We'll soon see. Rally tonight, Carbridge's, 10:30.
I shouldn't never have let you in the store. I really shouldn't. If anybody finds out my position, they'll be very ticklish.
I'm surprised to hear the word ticklish from your lips, Joe Taggart. Especially as Cousin Edie's husband has been pressing me for the name and address of a certain party who was at a certain party. So far, I have withheld it, but if you're going to be difficult...
No, you're going there. Go and get your overcoat. Only don't switch no lights on and don't touch nothing in the other department.
As if we would. No. You go back to your cubbyhole.
Yes.
We'll come and find you to be let out as soon as he completed our purchase.
I'm down in the boiler room. Wish I'd never gone to that party. Highway Patrol.
Ron, just you pedal that car back to the toy department immediately.
All right, F, 10-4.
It's absolutely inky, isn't it?
And it's well after 10-4. I don't understand what he's talking about.
Yeah, I don't even know what part of the store we're in. I beg your pardon.
I said we're in the food department. They do a very nice bit of brisket here, I must say.
Mum, we promised not to touch anything. Here, put your torch on and let's find our way to the men's outfitting.
All right. There. That shows a good light, doesn't it? Come on, then.
Oh, there you are. Look what I found. I could carry two lumps of coal in this.
What have you... Ron, lingerie department. Now, where have you got to, Mr. Plum?
Here. I found the men's outfitting towels up. Bring one over here.
Oh, righto. Ron, Ron, come and follow me.
Coming, yes.
Oh, Pa, there you are. Yes, now it's dark. How about that kiss we didn't have?
Ron, I'm over here. You're talking to a dummy.
Oh, beg your pardon, miss.
Come on over here, Ron.
Coming, Dad.
Look, I found the bargain overcoats on this rail.
Oh, aren't they lovely? Oh, wait a minute, Mr. Plum. You sure these are the 35-shilling overcoats? This one's marked 35 shillings.
Ah, you don't want to take your nose out of that. That's just sales language. GNS, that's short for guineas now shillings.
No, I've never heard that before.
Are you doubting my vivacity, yes?
No, of course not. But these coats just look like real camel hair. Didn't the advert say the bargain ones were navy blue?
Well, it's obvious what happened. They were navy blue, but they've sort of faded to this light fawn colour. Hence the heavy price reduction. Put it on, Ron.
Right, oh, Dad. Oh, Dad. Oh, it's lovely. What a shame it doesn't fit.
Oh, doesn't fit?
Nowhere. Look, the sleeves come all the way down to my wrist.
They're meant to, Ron. It just feels strange to you because your old overcoat was purchased when you were 12.
Keep it on, Ron. Here. There you are. 35 shillings on the counter. An honest business transaction, honestly completed. Now, come on, let's find Joe Taggart and get him to let us out. Ron, throw the light towards the exit.
Righto, Dad.
Oh. You camel-haired clophead. Throw the luck. Now, how are we going to see to find our way down to Joe?
Oh, dear, we'll break our necks on those stairs. Mr. Blum, we'll just have to stay here till the staff arrive in the morning.
In the
now.
Morning? No. I have strong personal reasons why I do not wish the staff to see Ron in that particular coat.
Why not?
Well, let's say it excites jealousy.
Oh, dear. Well, then we'll just have to wait here somewhere till it's light. And then we'll find Mr. Taggart and get him to let us out early.
Well, it's not light for another 6 hours. Where can we wait all that time?
Dad?
What do you want now?
I don't think you should talk so loud.
Why not, Ron?
I'm trying to get some sleep.
Sleep? Ron, where are you?
I'm in bed.
Bed? Effie's found the bedding department. Of course, that's where we can get our feet up. Come on, we'll take a bed each and have a little doze till dawn.
Run into unforeseen difficulties, but I still don't see why you couldn't have smuggled that coat out unnoticed. Somebody see you?
Someone see us? Said we neglected to wake up in time, and we were seen by roundabout, I should say, about 800 people.
800 people in the bedding department?
Them beds weren't in the bedding department.
Hey?
We were in the ruddy shop window.